Welcome, everyone, to another edition of Doc of the Town. Dr. Garrick Olson is here. It's really nice to see you. How have you been?
I've been terrific. You know, a lot of shakeups here and there. Things keep changing, but that's the nature of everything, is it keeps changing. And when you sent me this article from a CNN website about sleep and sleeplessness and sleep deficit, I thought, this is so perfect. It's something that is so mysterious and so crucial and continues to be very mysterious despite how crucial it is.
Well, you know, sleep is one of those things that's important. We need sleep. We need water. What else do we need?
Oh, food, clothing, shelter, affection.
But sleep is something that I think we sometimes put off.
We do. We think of it as some secondary need, something that, well, really I should do the dishes or finish just another episode of something on Netflix and think that, well, I can do without it. I'll just have more coffee. And it's not quite the same. It doesn't really seem to give us what we need. You know, the heading of your article that you sent me was a definition. It said, sleep debt, also called sleep deficit, is the difference between the amount of sleep someone needs and the amount they actually get. And that's what I think drives a lot of our debate, is to say, well, how much do I really need? Am I really getting that? And if I don't, what do I really lose? What do I gain and lose by not having that sleep? Sleep loss is strongly associated with reduced empathy, emotional regulation. And so I thought we'd break it down into a few different areas. Everybody who's been around toddlers around nap time knows
yes.
that they reduced empathy and emotional regulation. They're crabby. It turns out a lot of us adults,
not just toddlers,
a little crabby if we haven't had enough sleep. So even if you don't want to do it for yourself, do it for the people around you. Get enough sleep.
Get enough sleep. Okay.
So let's talk about what does sleep do? What's the purpose of it? And strikingly, when I was looking up more and more information about this for details for talking with you, Mohit, I was coming up with very little. It seems that there's some help with metabolic and endocrine and inflammatory regulation, and a lot of this is revealed from studies on withholding sleep. And then what happens to a person when you withhold sleep? You lose ground in certain areas. Theories include that sleep restores, it has energy conservation, it has memory consolidation. And I often rely on that, especially when I'm in the office and I'm talking to teenagers about life decisions that they're making, or even younger kids. I tell them that, you know, sleep, and I tell parents this, sleep is when the kids grow. This is when you file your memories. This is when you are taking the day's events and your brain is putting them together in a constructive and meaningful way. That's one of the theories about what dreaming is dreaming is your brain filing stuff in the REM component of sleep. So sleep architecture is what we call it. What is this REM? What's the rapid eye movement? Everybody knows that since the 80s when the band from Atlanta came out. And people recline and close their eyes. The brainwaves slow to something called an alpha rhythm. And this is a sort of a twilight time where you're not entirely asleep. You're not entirely awake. People may disagree with you if you say you were sleeping, and they'll say, no, I wasn't. And it turns out this alpha rhythm is that bridge between wake and sleep. The rhythm slows and then sleep happens. And then there are these different stages of the non-REM sleep. And it's three different. They're simply labeled N1, N2, and N3. N1 is a very light sleep. This is very similar to that alpha rhythm where it's just not really that deep.
Is that a
shallow
nap, maybe? Like a power nap?
Even lighter than that.
Okay.
It's more like spacing out with your eyes closed.
Can we hear things around us?
Yeah, probably.
Okay.
I mean, that's why people will disagree with you, and they'll say, no, I wasn't asleep. I heard you walk into the kitchen, and then you dropped something, you know,
okay.
Wake me up more.
Okay.
So the largest percent of sleep is this N2. And typically in adult, it's around 50% of the night. And there are medications that can affect this. The benzodiazepine class, that's the Valium, Lorazepam, Xanax, that class can increase this N2, but not necessarily increase our restfulness.
Oh.
So stage three, this N3 is the deeper slow wave sleep, and that's about 10 to 20% of the overnight, and that increases with age. N3 is more in the first half of the night, and what our brain does is goes through these packets of sleep where it'll go down through all the stages and then it'll come back up after hitting REM. It'll come back up. And this happens 5 or 6 times a night.
It does.
More frequently as we get more and more duration of sleep. And that's why there's this conjecture going back to our great-grandmothers that you should go to bed early and you should wake up early, because if you have this go to bed late, wake up early, and take a nap some other time of day, you don't get that duration. You don't get the more rapid cycling of these sleep packets where you drop into the deeper levels and then back up and then drop into the deeper levels. And between those levels, between those packets, we'll often alert a little bit. And that's when we'll be noticing that our toes are cold, and we'll pull our toes back into the blankies. And then we'll notice that maybe there's some light coming from the hallway, or our spouse, their iPad is still lighted, or something like that. You'll notice that, but then you'll fall back to sleep and go into that next packet. And REM sleep is when we typically associate it with that vivid dreaming, mm-hmm. and that increases throughout the night. And if you bundle all of these theories together, you'll see that the longer duration sleep you get, the more packets you're going to go through, the more REM you're going to get. And very likely that allows you to do more filing of the day's events, and that will lead you to have a less cluttered desktop the next morning, where you can do more, you can absorb more. So it seems like if you're looking at what is going to make you restful, it's going to be long duration, starting relatively early, and the body craves habit. It just loves the consistent bedtime and wake time. So if we're looking at these cycles, they're maybe 90 to 120 minutes, and the first cycle is from the first onset to the first REM period, and we'll get several of these overnight. Newborns, we know, will sleep 16 to 18 hours a day in short blocks of time, and when people say they're sleeping like a baby, I wonder how restful that really is. Are you really up every 3 hours to eat and go to the bathroom? No. That's what sleeping like a baby really is. 3 months, they start to develop more of a light and day cycle where their pineal gland will start to get into the whole melatonin rush of its night time go to sleep. And that's something that we have in our pineal gland in the base of our brain to control our circadian rhythm, our light and dark. That's why we get such trouble when we try to have people work a third shift, for example, that they're trying to sleep during the daytime and trying to pretend that that's when they should be asleep, when really the pineal gland is pretty hard to fool. Young adults certainly need 8 hours per night. That's when we're learning so much. We're growing our brains.
And when you say young adults, is that teenagers or?
I would go teens through mid-20s. If you were to poll adolescents and young adults, it's very likely that they are not averaging 8 hours. They may get 10 or 12 one day of the week.
Okay.
But then the other nights, they're probably not doing that. Or they're doing it at a time that is not as efficient for getting to REM sleep and doing that filing of data that we think about as deep REM. And really, it just comes down to their brain's not developed enough to say, why am I doing this to myself? And like a sensible adult would say, no, I'll just go to bed at 10. I'll get up at 6. It's
right.
Fine. I got 8 hours. And there are other things that can affect this whole architecture of sleep. Like you're describing, who loses sleep? It's adolescents, people that don't have a firm grasp on their schedule, either by choice or not by choice.
Right.
There are a lot of people who have, for example, careers where they're pulled into work an overnight. When I used to deliver babies, that was very common, where I would work a day and then be woken up to deliver a baby, go take a short nap, and go back to work the next day.
And how did you feel after that? Did you notice that it wrecked your whole schedule kind of?
That never bothered me that much.
Okay.
But golly, I was in my 30s.
Okay.
I was more resilient to such things. And I mean, part of it was I felt such a privilege to being a part of that family's delivery that it was really buoying to have taken part in that. So that was part of why it was so rewarding. Unlike some other people who might have a job that interrupts sleep, that is not quite as satisfying. It ends up being a little bit of perspective and a little bit of sleep deprivation too. And some people have genuine medical problems, like obstructive sleep apnea is a hot topic. The more we look, the more we find obstructive sleep apnea.
And what is that?
Well, that's where your back of your tongue and your soft parts in your throat will just fall back and turn off your airway. They'll just shut it off like a valve. And then all of a sudden, you start to startle because you're not breathing. And so this wakes you because you are not breathing. And then you start breathing because all of the muscle tone comes back to the back of your mouth. And then you start to drift off again, and then it closes again. And some people will do this 80 times in an hour.
And that's not restful.
They never get into deep sleep patterns. They're always dropping down by a minute, and then they're back up again.
So you literally can have a full night's rest, but yet wake up tired.
Exhausted. Because really, they didn't sleep much at all. They never got into those deep phases where they're filing the information from yesterday. Their desktop is still stacked with post-it notes.
When they wake up.
Yeah. So there are other issues. For example, you can have a snoring bed partner. You may have an old dog that needs to get up and get out at night. Or you may be an old guy who has to get up and get out of bed at night and go to the toilet. So these are all things that may interrupt the whole sleep cycling. And this can cause harms. You know, we know that if you're having five or fewer hours per night, that you have a higher risk of heart disease, diabetes, stroke, COPD, chronic kidney disease, liver disease, depression, dementia, cancer, all
that
stuff.
These are all from lack of sleep?
Not from lack of sleep, but connected. There may be a little bit of chicken and egg with some of these things. For example, we also know that sleeping 9 or more hours harms you too.
It does?
It's connected. It's connected somehow.
It seems dreamy.
How would you know? You've never done it.
but it seems like a life goal.
If you have someone who, for example, has chronic pain, they may not get 5 hours a night. They may be so interrupted that they can't do it, and their chronic pain may be from some other devastating problem. For example, diabetic peripheral neuropathy, and then their diabetes is there, and then we see this causing harm. 9 or more hours may be more connected with people with very severe depression who have that kind of slowed down depression where they just can't get out of bed, or people with dementia.
But are they really sleeping?
They probably are. Okay. And it's connected to their illness.
Okay.
So it's not that the 9 hours is necessarily harming them, but rather it's connected to the illness. In the same way sleeping under 5 hours is connected. There may be a little bit of cause and effect for people who are chronically sleeping under 5 hours who are over 50 years old. Because when you compare those with other people who are over 50, they have a 30% higher risk of chronic disease compared to people who sleep 7 hours a night. And the group who were over 70 years old was at 40% increased risk. So there are inflammatory markers that go up. You can do blood tests on these things. And the immune response is not as sharp. For example, if you do an experiment where you're going to give people a flu shot and you have half of them not sleep or not sleep well or sleep very little and the other half sleep well, and then after you give them the shot, you go back and you test for the antibodies, the people who have slept well have a better antibody response.
Wow.
It really happens. So you can see immune defense blunted in rats too, but we're less concerned about the rat's sleep habits. They don't have Netflix. And then there's obesity and type 2 diabetes, and we know that this night sleeping can affect both of those things, where people are more likely to have obesity and type 2 diabetes if they are overnight shift workers. And people that are sicker at baseline are more likely to sleep too much or too little, even if they're in bed longer. And then humans clearly learn less well when they're not sleeping enough. I remember when I was in med school and I was learning about sleep, I would study a whole bunch of stuff. And you know that feeling when you get like your brain's full?
Yes.
Like, that's all I got. You know, that's my hard drive right there. I would set my watch for 24 minutes and I would take a short nap and then I would wake up with some more space on my hard drive.
Yeah. 24 minutes? Mm-hmm. What was that about?
You know, sometimes when you take a nap, it's refreshing. Mm-hmm. And sometimes you wake up from a nap and you think,
you're too groggy.
I slept too long.
Yes.
That was too long. And I found that my sweet spot was 24 minutes. So I had my good old reliable Timex that probably still has the same battery in it from 25 years ago and running better than my watch that I wear every day and even knows when it's leap year, go Timex, that had an alarm on it. And that was one of the ways that I got through memorizing so many things when I was in med school, was sleeping and scheduling my sleep and even using sleep as a memorizing device. So excessive sleepiness also is a common cause of car crashes and near misses. And it's over half of all fatal truck crashes can have a root cause of excessive sleepiness. So what do we do? What do you do if you feel sleepy? Well, look at me. I'd say see your doctor. Start there. Because who knows, maybe it's a gland problem. You know, maybe you got a new thyroid, something, cortisol. So maybe it's something else. So I'd say go through and do all the work up with your doctor and also see what role your habits are playing. For example, like I was saying about the body craving sleep, we know how to set an alarm to wake up, but maybe you need an alarm set to tell you when to go to bed. Set an alarm for both, because a lot of us will get distracted, preoccupied, overly enthusiastic about cleaning something or some project. And if we're distracted, we might forget that it's bedtime, and the importance of sleeping might take precedence over finishing what we're doing right now. Other tricks for sleeping well is doing nothing else in the bedroom. So these people that have a vast entertainment and exercise center and desk, they're not helping themselves sleep well. If you have a room that's just dedicated for sleep, that's going to help train your brain, just like a Labrador Retriever. Your brain's going to say, oh, walking into bedroom, time for sleep. It also helps if you have some kind of sleep ritual. This trains your brain. You know, you put on your PJs, you brush your teeth, you hit your knees and say your prayers, and then the brain knows, oh, I know what's next, sleep. So if you take at least a 30-minute break from stimulating activities, including screens of all types, that's scrolling your phone and looking at Netflix and everything. Another trick that I used to use with my kids, and everybody knows it's much easier to wake up a child than make them fall asleep. You parents listening, pay attention. I had this little song that I would sing them, and it would go, head down, eyes closed, no moving, no talking, pretend you're asleep, and breathe four in, ready? And then fast out. And you just feel when you deflate like that, that you're just getting closer to sleep. Comfortable room, quiet and dark. At first ask yourself, all right, is the room too hot, too cold? Is it too bright? Is it noisy? Do I live by the train tracks? Or for some of these New York City people, is it not quite noisy enough? Maybe you need to bring a little cassette of the usual street sounds so that you feel at home. There are other rituals that we know about from our great grandmas, like warm milk. I'm not sure that that's chemically like a drug per se, but if you use it as part of your sleep ritual, before you brush your teeth, you want to get that lactose off your teeth, then that might be a nice part of your sleep ritual. If somebody just wants to try something and has already gone through the other things I've discussed here with adjusting home behaviors, sure, you can try some melatonin. It's similar to what our pineal gland in the back of our brain makes. And so this might do something at the end of the day to help you set up for falling asleep. And it may also put you in the frame of mind to say, okay, now I'm taking a pill. Open bottle, take pill, go sleepy.
We need our sleep.
We sure do. And if we don't, we miss out on other stuff. So don't think that losing sleep is helping you not miss out on stuff. Think that getting sleep is helping you not miss out on stuff.
Great advice. Thank you so much. Doc of the Town, Dr. Garrick Olson. And again, tell us about your day job.
Oh, regular. I work for Allina. I am a float doctor. And then I've got my other job working with Refined Skin, where we do Botox, fillers, laser work. And recent change there, the Red Wing location, we moved out of the St. James building. They're focusing more on their weddings. And we are in the Merchants Bank building that's just across from the McDonald's. I have stopped coming to the View Beauty Studio for a little while, but golly, I hope to be back here in Hastings doing local care for Botox and fillers.
Thank you so much, and we appreciate all this great information, and you are listening to another edition of Doc of the Town on AM 1460 and FM 97.7 KDWA in Hastings.